are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Years had passed since the crisis of the Great Schisms, and unknown to the complacent and burgeoning Republic government, a Sith Empire had been forged in the far reaches of the Stygian caldera. An era of relative peace reigned, and the Republic embarked on its great task of exploration and peaceful expansion. Daring and reckless explorers began mapping long stretches of safe interstellar routes. The Darragon twins were two such explorers who had inadvertently stumbled on the Sith Empire. Soon the discovery would unleash a war that would burn its way to the very heart of the Republic and unleash the Sith on the galaxy forevermore. The Empress Teta System. The Corus System was a deep core grouping of populated human worlds that had grown to become an ecumenopolis. Based on trade and wealth, the planets of Corus had vast deposits of valuable carbonite that allowed further exploration of the galaxy by providing the resources for use in sleeper ships. As hyperdrive technology became available, the Hyperspace Navigators Guild would form on the planet and oversee the launch of many exploration craft that would map the stars and the discovery of hyperspace lanes, safe routes of travel out of the rest of the galaxy. Because of its massive wealth and resources, the system suffered from excessive corruption, including private dealings with the Republic, which bequeathed the carbonite trade to wealthy aristocrats from the world. It was to this royal family that Empress Teta would accede to the throne. Angered by the corruption and illegal carbonite trade, as well as petty infighting, Empress Teta sought to unite the worlds of the Corus system. She launched the Unification, also called the Reunification Wars, and united the seven worlds in an effective but brutal campaign backed by the Republic. Her triumph resulted in the renaming of the system to the Empress Teta System, and the power and influence of the United Realm began to rival even that of Coruscant. To ensure its interests would be maintained, the Republic sent the Jedi Odan Ur and Mehmet Nadil to help the Empress finish her war as decisively as possible and safeguard the realm, and by extension, the Republic. Heroes of the Empire. Donning the title of Warrior Princess, Teta was known to go into battle herself, not content to sit idle while commanding her formidable forces to war. She had a strong sense of justice and was outraged at the lawlessness and poverty rampant on the other six worlds of Corus. Sparking her desire to unite the region under a strong central government, she would ensure her empire would be acknowledged by the burgeoning Galactic Republic, and would personally attend to court on Coruscant as the representative of her home system. She was a militarist and maintained arms, soldiers, and warships, even after her successful campaigns, insisting that she would not leave her worlds defenseless, even as the Republic sought to rely on diplomacy and the Jedi over a standing military of their own. Jori Daragon, having recently escaped her Sith captors aboard the Starbreaker 12, had returned to the Koros system, absent her brother, who was left behind, thought dead, but working with his Sith captors. Jori warned that the Empress of the Sith Empire and their plans for a coming invasion. While skeptical at first, the warnings of the young explorer and the advice of her Jedi companions convinced her to prepare for the worst. Jedi Master Mehmet Nadil. Appointed as an advisor to Princess Teeta during the Unification Wars, he became her most trusted advisor as she rose to become the Empress. He received the Padawan Odan Ur to assist and conclude the war effort. It was he and Odan Ur who also saved Jori and Gav Daragon from the mercenary thugs during a chance encounter before their ill-fated exploration and discovery of the Sith Empire. An act that would have farther-reaching consequences than Master Nadil could possibly imagine. The Jedi Master also believed the visions Odan began to manifest about the return of the Dark Jedi exiles. Together they went to Coruscant to warn the Republic and the Jedi of these troubling visions. However, without hard evidence, the Senate remained skeptical. Soon enough, Jori Daragon emerged back on the Kornos, escaping the clutches of the Sith, confirming the dreams, speaking of a hidden empire plotting an invasion. Odan Ur. A gray-skinned, scaled Draethios species, notable for their predatory but humanoid appearance and exceedingly long lifespans, Odan Ur was a studious Jedi Padawan when he was assigned by his master to the Koros system. While not a fan of combat, Ur had studied the rare and powerful force technique called battle meditation and could sway the outcomes of the mass violent engagements. Despite his bookish nature, his special talent was one of the reasons he was assigned to Koros during the Unification Wars, as to assist the Warrior Princess. After the conclusion of the Reunification Wars and the final surrender of the rebel leader, Laban, thanks to Odan's battle meditation, he began to have visions of the Sith Empire and the Dark Jedi, long since forgotten to history. Odan and Mehmet returned to Coruscant with Empress Teeta in a doomed attempt to warn the Republic of an impending darkness. Their pleas were ignored. However, Odan Ur's master, the Seligian Jedi Uro, came to the Empress Teeta system to consult with him about his dark premonitions. It was during Uro's visit that the sky would suddenly part and fire would rain from the heavens, as a fleet of Sith ships appeared suddenly in the system and attacked. The war begins. Following the homing beacon secretly installed on Jori Daragon's ship, and leading one of the first military incursions through hyperspace, the Sith Empire's fleet, led by the recently proclaimed Darth Lord of the Sith, Naga Sadow, emerged suddenly and violently. Outnumbered, Sadow unleashed multiple incursions across Republic space, striking at the Koros system and even Coruscant itself, in a series of lightning attacks, wreaking havoc as quickly and decisively as possible. Mehmet Nadil had returned to Coruscant to attempt to rally what Jedi he could, in spite of the Republic's skepticism, when the Sith invasion force appeared in the skies above. Devastating orbital strikes leveled buildings and drop pods filled with Sith warriors crashed into the streets of the home of the world city. Nadel and three other Jedi Masters stood in defense of the very steps of the Senate Hall, where many citizens fled for refuge. The Republic had only a basic security force that was grossly outgunned and seemingly outnumbered by their attackers. Nadel would soon discover, however, that many of the monsters and Sith warriors would vanish into thin air when struck by his lightsaber, realizing quickly that a large part of the invasion force were simply illusions conjured by Nagasadao, dark Sith magic, to make his armies appear many times their size. The aspersions vanished when Sadow was attacked by his apprentice Gav Darragon, who had a sudden change of heart when he saw the devastation the Dark Lord had unleashed on his home world and the Republic at large. As the Republic forces saw their true numbers of the Sith, they rallied with the Jedi and drove the invasion forces back. Meanwhile, in the Koros system, Empress Teeta's army repelled the Sith invasion with her substantial forces, and with the help of the Jedi Master Uru and his Padawan Odan-Ur, who was once again able to use his battle meditation to see through Nagasadao's ruse and repel his invasion force there. The war ends. All the destruction I've seen, all the deaths I've caused by leading the Sith year, my own petty anger has led me to bring this devastating war to the Republic. Despite its pleasures and opulence, the Sith Empire is rotten to its core. Quote, Gav Darragon. Unknown to the Republic, Sadow was casting his illusions aboard a massive Sith meditation sphere, drifting in the dying star Primus Golud, where Gav Darragon had gone to confront his former Sith master. Boarding the meditation sphere to challenge the Sith Lord, man to man. After boarding the craft, however, Gav found it abandoned. He had been lured into a trap set by Sadow, calling his sister Jori for aid. The Empress Teeta's forces arrived in the system to capture Gav and the meditation sphere. Gav renounced his former allegiance to the Sith and informed the arriving fleet of how to get into Sith space. Before the meditation sphere could be boarded, and Gav willingly be taken into custody, Sadow sprung his trap. Secretly rallying the remnants of his Sith forces to the system, he had used his former apprentices once again to lure his enemies to him. Sadow's fleet engaged Empress Teeta's forces, and amidst the battle, the Dark Lord's true intent became realized as he tried to make the dying star go supernova, killing everyone in the system. Gav, in a last feat of redemption, warned Empress Teeta's forces of Sadow's plan and transmitted the coordinates of the Sith Empire before being destroyed by solar flares conjured by the Dark Lord. With the coordinates, the Koros military counter-invaded Sith space, forcing a rout of Sadow's forces and making them fight on their home turf. Sadow and his Sith, having been decisively repelled, limped back into their own space in an attempt to rally a defense. As the remnants of his fleet came out of hyperspace, they were greeted by a new surprise. The trap is sprung. A Sith fleet stood waiting as Nagasato arrived back in the Stygian caldera, but not as reinforcements, as foes. Leading the rival force was Ludo Kresh, seemingly returned from the dead. Unknown to Sato, Kresh abandoned his ship when it was destroyed prior to his Republic invasion, and used the time that he was away to consolidate his power and raise an army within Sith space to await the Dark Lord's return in triumph or defeat. Kresh immediately engaged his rival's battle fleet over the skies of Korriban, and he would have won but for one of Sadow's pilots, whose fighter had been critically damaged, decided to fly into the bridge of Kresh's ship, killing him and breaking his forces. Sadow seemingly escaped annihilation a second time, before being able to catch his breath, and Brachida's forces emerged from hyperspace to exact vengeance on the Sith Empire. The remnants of the Sith prepared to make a final stand, as Sadow made his escape, knowing that the battle was to be a lost cause. Through the use of his Sith magics, he created a solar flare that made it appear his ship was destroyed. The Empress, satisfied with the annihilation of the Sith fleet and the supposed death of Sadow, ordered her forces to return to Republic space. Unbeknownst to all, Sadow aboard his flagship, the Corsair, found an uninhabited moon in the Yavin system, full of lush jungles where he decided to start anew with his Misasi slaves. The Scars That Remain. Although the Great Hyperspace War was very brief, it was devastating. Mass civilian casualties and destruction of infrastructure ranged across a number of Republic worlds, not just on Coruscant and the Koros system, but other places such as Metallos and Anaxes, who were simultaneously attacked by the invading Sith. Chancellor Plumo of the Republic immediately ordered an invasion of Sith space, along with the Republic military and Jedi, to purge the worlds of the Sith Empire. With the death of Ludo Kresh and disappearance of Nagasato, a new Sith Lord took over by the name of Shar Dakan, to lead the defense of the Empire. But they were ultimately broken by the Republic. Staging desperate final suicide attacks, the Republic abandoned their desolation of the Sith Empire, and the survivors emerged from the refugees they had taken in the ruins of their tombs and cities. A new Sith Lord, Vitiate, emerged with a new plan for the battered Sith survivors. The Sith Empire, as it had existed, had been destroyed, with small enclaves of scattered survivors each coming up with their own strategies for survival across a handful of surviving Sith worlds. After the war, the Jedi, Odan Ur, established a great library on Ossus, which would, amongst its great libraries and archives, come to house Sith artifacts collected from the wreckage of the war, including Sith holocrons recovered from derelict vessels. Jori Daragon was offered the chance to name her reward for her assistance in the war effort, though she settled only for Araba the Hutt's old repair dock, where she would live an innocuous life after the loss of her brother. Tita had been overcome with sorrow for the great loss of life and devastation of the war. She would go on to rule wisely, peacefully, and rebuild all that was lost. The Coro system was also honored for their part in the war by the Republic, and the system grew in great wealth and power and influence on the galactic stage. Empress Teta, although human, would live to the grand age of 175 years old before passing away peacefully, but her legendary status would be remembered long after. Years later, Teta became a mythical hero, and the Coro system, in honor of their warrior leader, who had not only unified them, but was also instrumental in maintaining her military to repel the Sith invader, was renamed the Empress Teta system. As for the Republic, to honor the brave Jedi who fought the invasion forces of the Sith on the very steps of the Senate, dedicated a mountain to them, one of the few remaining surface features not covered over by the last building cityscape. This mountain would later be built over and become the site of the future Jedi Temple on Coruscant in the millennia to come. The hyperspace war would be the first time the Republic and Sith would come to blows, but it would be far from the last, setting the stage for many more battles and many more losses of life to come, as the war would rage across the stars for millennia.
Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. This is Christian.
And this is Jordan.
We're currently sitting over the ruins of Korriban still. I haven't left. I like to come here to meditate and think about the past and better days.
Yep.
No, I'm just kidding.
And occasional ghost haunting at night. I hear Marco Ragnos whisper
in your ears.
In my ears. Yes.
Telling you to do terrible things.
Yeah. Telling me to murder Ewoks or something.
But it's the best sleep of your life, so you have to. Small price to pay. We are talking about the Great Hyperspace War today, which is kind of one of the bigger conflicts that happens in early history of the galaxy. It's really kind of where we earn the name Star Wars in the franchise. So kind of leading up to it in the story so far, if you've been listening to our episodes in order, we've had Naga Sadow unleash the might of the Sith Empire against the Republic. So this is the first time we're seeing the Sith and the Republic and the ostensibly the Jedi as in relation to the Republic go to war with each other, which will have aftershocks all throughout history until the very end of Star Wars time. This is the beginnings of a war that will never essentially end, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah. Well, really like a rivalry between people group or two rival philosophies. And they really, I think, almost get cemented in this war. Like it is, this is now like light versus dark.
Yeah. And this is where the Sith become the Sith. Yeah. Before it was dark Jedi versus Jedi.
Yeah.
Now it's the Sith versus Jedi. It's mortal enemies.
Yeah. Yeah. The scale was very different. Like when it was dark Jedi, that was more like Jedi cults almost that were considered heretical to the mainstream Jedi. But this is like an entirely different religion.
Yeah. And it's had time. It's had thousands of years to cement and like isolate itself and kind of develop its own core philosophy.
Yeah. I would almost put it this way. It's like, if you think about, you know, like Mormonism or something is like this kind of culty offshoot of Christianity. Sorry, Mormons. but like, Islam is a completely different religion, and like Islam versus Christianity, say 1,000 years ago or something, like that's kind of what we're talking about now. Even though they might have some common faith in like Christianity and Islam are Abrahamic religions, so they have some common ancestry, but they are like they both do not recognize each other as legitimate, and they're very large culturally important, and this is
and even have come to blows throughout history.
That's right. And sort of now when we're talking about the Sith and the Jedi, this is to me that's sort of the closest analogy you can get is that like we're talking about two very different religions. Yeah, now.
They've had like a common origin point, but have now split off so distinctly now that.
And over thousands of years too.
Yeah, so. Again, like the Sith Empire has been stewing on its own without outside contact for thousands of years.
Yeah, building its own culture, its own writings, its own philosophy.
They've had time to think and dwell and expand.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at. Now, I do want to mention, just because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. This isn't the first time we've had intergalactic conflict. We've had things like the Rakatan Empire and their conquest, the Kwa, and all these other species.
Yeah.
But they're so lost to history by this point.
Yeah.
And they're so detached from ideas of like, they're like pre-republic, right?
Also the difference, even with the Infinite Empire, they were the only ones who could travel between.
Yeah. That's kind of the thing that gave them that unique
star
power.
Out of their own solar system, right? Yeah. Whereas now we're talking about two hyperspace
capable.
The first, I believe, is the first like two hyperspace capable civilizations fighting each other.
Hyperspace, yes, if you're specific to hyperspace. The Infinite Empire weren't the only intergalactic empire. Like I said, the Kwa existed.
Yes, there was a Kwa.
And I think even the Hutts predated this, but their impact and their like they were the few species that could, right? And their impact is like kind of confined to their time and space, right? Like they have very little impact on the events we're currently talking about, but the events we're talking about now, even though they're thousands of years in the future, will still resound thousands of more years in the future.
Yeah.
And then to speak about hyperspace as a technology, it is just been discovered recently versus like the way the Infinite Empire traveled through infinity gates, as did the Kwa.
The Infinite Empire did use hyperspace.
Was it
travel.
Called specifically hyperspace though? Or no, was it...
But they use the force to power yeah. their. So it wasn't like.
Yeah, like hyperspace is a unique technology. It's a specific.
Yeah, but they
technology.
Were the first ones to. I'm pretty sure that's.
I don't know if they use the term hyperspace.
I'm pretty sure they were like the first. Okay. They invented
this could be settled with a very easy Google search, which
okay, so someone's going to do right now. No, I'm pretty sure the Infinite Empire invented hyperspace travel.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Let's leave it. They weren't using infinity gates.
Here's what I knew. I could Google this right now, but what we will do is leave it to the fans to vote okay. yep. and pick a side. This is the beginnings of a new religious conflict. I just want you to know. It's happening right now. Anyways, moving on from the hyperspace discussion. A couple of interesting notes about how the Sith decided to conduct their full-scale invasion of the Republic. It's very reminiscent of the Blitzkrieg, which is, I mean, I don't know ancient history warfare that well. I'm sure chariots had a similar effect, but a lot of people associate World War One, Blitzkrieg is a World War II phenomenon, but World War One, where the idea of like very fast, decisive attacks on a target is kind of where it originated. Again, I'm not a specialist in military history. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But yeah, World War One, the Germans get a lot of credit for quote-unquote inventing that like idea of Blitzkrieg. Again, a World War II term, I know. But so that's kind of something that the Sith implement is a full-scale invasion of the Republic as fast. They know they're outnumbered, but if they can hit their targets hard enough, fast enough, that they don't even know or can't even muster their defenses in time, it could lead to an absolute victory.
Yeah.
That's at least Nagasato's plan. Obviously, that gets derailed for a number of reasons. But yeah, I just wanted to draw that kind of parallel with the... that tactic of full-scale rapid invasion, which is pretty sound on its face.
Yeah.
Whether or not, you know, he was in a good position to actually pull it off is questionable. Depends, like, how superior your enemy is numerically and how fast.
Well, it seems like he would have if not for his apprentice.
Yeah, turning on him.
Yeah.
But again, like, yeah. That'll lead me to the other thing is like the fact that he was attacking with inferior numbers. Like maybe if the Republic caught on for other reasons that a lot of these forces were an illusion.
Yeah.
That might've turned the tide at a later date. Who knows? We're talking about a hypothetical battle in a hypothetical universe. It's like two layers of like, one thing is like, what's it called when you're doing like the opposite of what happened in history? There's a word for it.
Like revisionist?
No. It's like a thought experiment of like, well, if this had changed in history, then this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Anyways, we're doing that, but on a fantastical level, which is like two layers removed from...
like alternative history, alt history.
Almost like alt history. There's a word for it. Counterfactuals.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, arguing counterfactuals.
Right, yeah.
Which is already like a whole thing of like, can you really argue that? If you're into alternative history, it's a big debate of like, oh, did you factor in this thing or that thing? And like, oh, you didn't, you know.
Yeah, we should do some counterfactuals with Star Wars.
Well, but that's my thing is like, it's already hard enough to do counterfactuals with reality.
Yeah.
Let alone with fiction where it's like, well, if this didn't happen, how do you know this wouldn't have happened, right? Because it's all made up. But anyways, that's what we're doing right now. Would he have been successful... anyways, with his Blitzkrieg tactic, did he have the resources, the manpower? Because, again, they were quite outnumbered by the Republic. They were invading a superior force. And it was really based on the speed and violence of their attack, as well as the illusion factor that gave them the dominant edge.
Yeah.
And we don't know. We don't know what would have happened. Obviously, the bad guys aren't allowed to win because it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
But it was a sound plan, after all. On the note of the war itself... the Great Hyperspace War, you'll see kind of come up mentioned in the future now and again as like this big historical event, which again, it was like for all the reasons we're saying, big intergalactic conflict, kind of the origins of the conflict we see all through history from this point forward. But one thing is how quick and how isolated it seems. So a lot of this information comes from the comic series that we did actually a review episode on. It's behind our paywall on Patreon if you want to go listen to that. It's a good time to go do that. But a lot of this information comes from Tales of the Jedi comic book series. And from our reading of it, it seemed very limited in scope because, you know, you're following specific characters through the story of this big invasion. But it was this big galaxy, well, maybe not galaxy, but within the limited scope of the Republic and the Sith Empire at the time, which is like mostly confined to the core worlds. So perspective again, like, yes, the Republic does exist. They have, you know, tons of worlds. They're not the Republic that you imagine maybe during episode one, right? They're not that big yet. They're growing and they're headed in that direction. But it is still kind of defined as this quote unquote galaxy defining conflict, but it happens over the span of like 2 weeks. So it's very quick.
Yeah.
And again, it feels very limited because you only spend time on the Koros sector, which later becomes the Emperor's Theta system, and Coruscant, which, yes, are kind of the two main players, but it kind of makes the whole conflict feel very small.
Yeah.
But I do want to stress that it's multiple Republic worlds getting invaded all at once.
Yeah.
You maybe just don't get that you don't get that scope or feeling from just reading the comic book.
Yeah.
You kind of have to rely on like outside inferences and mentions.
Yeah, I mean, presumably, and I don't think we've had a hard number, but presumably like millions of people died.
Yeah, and again, that's what I'm talking about, the scope of the conflict. Yeah. Like, you're bombing Coruscant. Every bomb is probably going to have tons of casualties. Again, Coruscant isn't the Coruscant you think of today.
Yeah.
But it's still becoming that.
It's still an ecumenopolis by then, is it not?
I think it is, if not pretty close to it. The reason I say I don't know if it is entirely is because the Jedi Temple isn't built yet, and they actually give them a mountain. But I feel like it's just those topographical features that are left. So, like if Mount Everest was the last piece of nature still available on Earth's surface, that's super tiny compared to the rest of the planet's surface that you're bombing, right? So again, you're bombing Coruscant. You're going to have crazy casualties. The Koros system has an ecumenopolis too, and they go, you know, full scale invaded.
Yeah.
And again, they're not ready for it. So there's like no real defenses, right?
Yeah.
Again, it's cataclysmic in the damage to infrastructure and to civilians and the military that does end up rallying and putting up a fight as well. But again, just trying to put things into perspective. If you ever do read the comic book, like I said, it feels very limited in scope, but it is supposed to be this like wider conflict. And then again, the time scale. 2 weeks is very quick for an intergalactic invasion, especially relative to something like the Clone Wars, which is like, I think, 3 years, right? Which even to me seems pretty brief for an interstellar conflict. I think it's always nice to pad those numbers a little bit and make it a little more fuller if you want like greater scale, right? Like World War One, World War Two lasted longer than that, so...
30 years war.
Yeah, right? Like 100 years war.
Yeah.
If you really wanted to. But yeah, it obviously...
No, the literal 30 years.
Yeah, war. No, I know. Yeah. Okay. And I'm saying the 100 years war. You could get big with it, right?
Yeah, like
human history. That's just one planet, right? Small nations. But again, you also want to keep things confined maybe to... Depending on the story you're telling, like you could make it a story of intergenerational conflict if it's like 100 years war.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to tell like... If you want your characters to live and exist within a certain time frame, like let's say the story of Anakin Skywalker, for example, during the Clone Wars, you kind of want to have a more condensed timeline to work with so that your character doesn't age out or there's not long periods of nothing happening in their lives or stuff like that, obviously. But like I said, 2 weeks seems very quick for the first major war that gets mentioned all through history.
Yeah, it's true. It does. But at the same time, I feel like it doesn't have to be super long. Like there's no
true. Yeah. Like it just could be, again, going back to that Blitzkrieg idea, it's just really big, violent and fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And over just as quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. For me, it just kind of seemed odd again especially for the echoes it leaves in history. But like you said, I mean, World War One really started with the assassination of one person.
Yeah.
Leads to all these casualties, right? So I'm just making an observation. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's an observation. Something else to bring up here is, so after kind of the Sith forces get broken, they retreat back to the Sith Empire. The Republic goes on like a genocidal crusade right after.
Yeah, so I was actually wondering about that. I'm like, they want to wipe these guys off the face of the map. And the Jedi go along with it.
Yes. So I'm like, while I was reading that, I was kind of like, this, they're almost trying to mention, like downplay it.
Yeah.
And kind of mention like, oh yeah, it's just like a natural next steps kind of thing. And I'm like, no, it's not. You just guys became the bad guys.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they justify it or how they thought of it. Some of the justifications I heard were like,
it was a different time back
right.
then.
Right. Yeah. The Jedi weren't as sophisticated as they are now. They're still genocidal though, if you ever pop up as a Sith. No.
From a certain point of view.
Yeah, sure. No, one of the justifications I heard was that they saw the Sith Empire as this existential threat. And again, going back to the speed and violence, like it's almost like a 9/11 incident, right? Yeah. Where like such a horrific act galvanizes a population and everyone's 100%, let's go to war, yeah. Right? And let's go get revenge for this slight.
Or, well, I mean, like you said, maybe if they did view them as an existential threat,
we have to wipe them out.
Yeah, we have to wipe them out because they will come back one day.
And finish the job that they started. Yeah. Again, though, like, then that leads to a bunch. There's not a lot of information on the counterattack.
Yeah.
Only that it happened. But you can kind of also see then how that leads to a galvanizing of the Sith. Being like, hey.
Yeah.
You just wiped out our civilization.
Yeah.
We kind of want revenge.
Yeah.
Granted, they were the aggressors and their philosophy, we know their philosophy makes them inherently aggressive.
Yeah.
But I don't know how the Republic would have known that, right? Like,
yeah.
If ships kind of like appeared in orbit, it's not like they're giving you a treatise as to why they're invading. They just do and they just start bombing stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how they understood Sith philosophy enough to think that they were going to be an existential threat, at least by this point. Although I will say a lot of information was gathered by Jedi, like Odo and Ur, who ended up building a whole library out of some of the information he recovered. But again, I imagine that's like more of a process rather than like, hey, yeah, let's go back and genocide these guys because they're obviously an existential threat, right? It's not like Nagasada was like reading off the principles of Sith philosophy to his enemies while he's invading.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just trying to find ways to justify what happened here.
Yeah, it definitely seems
questionable.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, without more information, like I'd have to judge it as being pretty evil.
Yeah,
an evil thing to do.
Overly aggressive.
Yeah.
In the counterattack, and you do have like individuals like Empress Teda showing a lot more restraint and like, no, let's go back. Let's focus on our wounded and our dead.
Yeah.
But then the Republic and the Jedi, again, implicated in this, are like, no, we're going back for revenge. Which shows a kind of a distinction between those internal factions.
Yeah.
Also on that note, too, you have like other Sith, like it sets the stage. It levels what was the old Sith Empire, and it sets the stage for kind of some new Sith factions that will arise. Quote unquote, spoiler alert. Not quote unquote, but spoiler alert, in case you're detached from a lot of Star Wars lore nowadays, you'll see kind of like the rise of Darth Vitiate and his Sith Empire.
Yeah.
We name drop them there. So just keep those names in the back of your mind because we're in a little while here going to get into them and how they kind of fractured off and how kind of the Sith will rebound from this. But the Sith Empire, as we know it, as in their golden age,
yeah.
Ajunta Paul, all these people. Marco Ragnos, all their legacies are kind of now in ruins.
Yeah.
And that's kind
of... They almost like bit off more than they could chew with this and like who got their fleet wiped out and then...
Got their civilization desolated.
Yeah. But then even like when Sadow returns back, he has a fight with Ludo Crash, right?
Yeah. And that obviously didn't help their cause.
Yeah, that didn't help them in the defense of their own civilization.
Yeah.
So...
Which, again, it's kind of ironic because Ludo Kresh was the one that was about self-preservation. He was right in their argument. He was like, no, if we do this, like, we risk our empire, which turns out, you lost it.
Cause
and Sadow himself is forced to go into exile and hide on Yavin,
mm-hmm.
one of the moons of Yavin. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at now, kind of setting the stage for future episodes here. We're obviously going to continue this story and where it goes. But just kind of some names to keep in mind and kind of almost like save this point in the back of your mind for the Sith and how they're going to bounce back in the different iterations of Sith. And this is still quite a ways away before we reach kind of the rule of two phase of Sith philosophy.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to as we go through this story.
But this is sort of like where the Sith break off from being like a civilization and a species into being like a worldview and a
religion. And a philosophy. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, kind of back to our original points here. Yeah. Like they have a coherent belief system and yeah, they're not even Sith being associated with the species starts to get lost.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the species no longer holds territory as it used to.
Yeah.
And again, worlds like Korriban and stuff are still going to be big within the Sith, but now they are kind of these ruins and things, relics of the past that you kind of go back and look at rather than being active participants.
Yeah, you almost wonder, like, playing a hypothetical here, but if the...
Counterfactuals are counterfactuals, yeah.
You know, like, what if the sort of brutal attack on the Sith civilization by the Republic, like, actually turned a lot of people sympathetic towards the Sith cause, right? And like that's where the whole Sith idea started spreading beyond just the ethnicity and into like it became like a mind virus. I'm just saying, I don't know that this happened. I'm just saying, like,
is it possible?
You could see something like that creating fertile ground for like more
Sith extremism.
Yeah, radicalism and extremism. Yeah. You know, spreading beyond the borders of the Sith.
I would give more credence to that if it weren't for the fact that a lot of our dark Jedi that existed a couple thousand years when they first arrived in the Sith Empire had already kind of started documenting things like their code and stuff.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, yeah, it could be a way for it to spread, but they were already kind of in that mindset, I think.
I'm saying like even people within the Republic,
right? Exactly, it would spread to the other side rather than people who are already bought into it,
right? Yeah.
I mean, I suppose that's possible. I don't know if it's documented anywhere. You said it's counterfactual or hypothetical.
I know. We like to like reference a lot of like historical events here, but
yeah.
So like in 1906 or 7, maybe 1905. Russia invaded Japan, Tsarist Russia, and Russia had like a much bigger army and they were like seen as the greater power, but Japan like whooped them really badly, and because it was like on the east side of Russia, where it's like very sparsely populated and most of the army was in the west side of Russia, like the cost and the resources to
ship everyone over to the
Yeah, it was like an incredibly costly war. Yeah,
it's like shipping someone across Europe, but it's all within one country because Russia's so freaking big.
That's right. But a lot of people attribute this action by, I think it was Nicholas the third or something, or the second or third. They attributed this as to like what would ultimately lead to the event of the Russian Revolution in 1917. Because after this, like there had actually been previous revolutionary attempts, but they were easily like put down. But it was like after this that like people just started joining the Communist Party in droves because they were like so mad that they got dragged into this war and like they were like beaten really bad, and it made the emperors like look really bad as well, because they completely miscalculated.
Yeah.
And it actually launched Japan into being like a superpower in that region, yeah. Right? Because now they were like seen as
a credible military threat.
Yeah. Right up until the bombing of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, like those like 40 odd years, Japan was like a superpower. As a result of this war. So it's just interesting to see like, you know, the implications, and like you make one bad calculation and then like you foment a revolution inside your own country. Right. So, I'm just saying like these kind of events that happen can like lead to internal problems that are really difficult to contain.
Yeah, people that are like, yeah, is the Republic being overly aggressive? Why are we, you know, doing this? And then they might maybe like, maybe the Sith were right about some things. Or No, I could. It's possible.
Possible.
We just don't have any documented stories of such cases.
Just doing some filler. Like I like to do that with like a lot of the Star Wars stories. Oh, maybe like you know, you kind of fill in your own fan fiction a little bit.
So. Oh yeah, I'm sure every Star Wars fan does.
Yeah,
and some of them get crazy enough that they actually write it down and we'll submit it.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, but beyond that, just some quick mentions here. Just a minor observation I just wanted to make is, well, kind of two of them. One, so not really mentioned a whole lot in the episode, but the Sith meditation sphere is like a ship that Nagasato uses to kind of conduct the war effort from. It's kind of where he focuses his Sith energy to create this like bolstered illusionary force from. It looks a lot like a TIE fighter.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. If you actually look at it.
I didn't actually look at it.
Yeah, it looks like a very primitive TIE fighter. It's a lot bigger. Like, it's a ship you can actually board.
Okay.
Which Gav Darragon actually does. But, it's very reminiscent of a TIE fighter in design. Well, I don't know.
Are they maybe trying to say that, like, Palpatine was, like, inspired
by
this? Yeah,
I don't know. That's where I was going to say. I was like, I don't know if they're making that much of a leap to say it's a direct thing or if it's just coincidental or just, like, something the artist wanted to tie an association with.
Right.
Without actually, like, meaning, deeper meaning beyond that. But it just an observation.
Okay,
fair enough. I wanted to point out. But in that, kind of interestingly enough, some force powers that get used here. One on the side of the Republic and Odin Ur is the power of battle meditation, which will be fairly significant in the future as well.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is the first time it really becomes prominent, like on a galactic spanning, like changing the tide of battle. We'll delve into it a little more, and we talk about it briefly in our Force Powers episode. But it is something that will come up time and again in the future as a distinct power, and I know we've mentioned it in other episodes too, in the future of like the new Jedi Order and stuff with Luke's Jedi Order. Some people practice it there, but just something as a reoccurring theme to keep kind of in the back of your mind as you listen to future episodes. And then Nagasato, his ability to, he has a unique force ability to blow up stars. So using like
force them to go supernova.
Yeah. Which is, it's just an interesting ability.
I mean, that's like a kind of a, I was kind of thinking that's a little outlandish.
OP.
Yeah.
A little overpowered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so then that brings things into question, like the Death Star. When you can annihilate, or the Sun Crusher, like.
Well, the Sun Crusher, yeah, but the Death Star is not even as powerful.
Right. That's
as
what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is like you invest all this time and money and energy into technology to be able to do something that one individual,
that's right, yeah,
who's presumably as powerful as Sadow, you know, maybe if Darth Sidious had access to that knowledge,
yeah,
he could just rule the Empire from like some throne, from Coruscant, sitting in his throne room just blowing up stars.
I don't know if I love
that. I just wanted to point it out. That's all. I'm just drawing attention to it.
Even the Sun Crusher is like more believable to me than like someone having the
ability power to blow up a star.
Yeah.
That's something that'll come up whenever we get around to Force Unleashed stuff. About how powerful is too powerful for Force abilities. What's kind of galaxy breaking.
I know like Darth Nihilus is kind of in that
range as well.
Is he too powerful? Like he can just kill anything he comes in the vicinity of.
And Darth Vitiate too.
Darth Vitiate as well.
Yeah, we'll be, I think, revisiting this idea of like force powers and
they're not very grounded. They just become like,
and again, it kind of like,
whereas like in the original films, all the force abilities were very grounded.
It's a far cry from force push.
Yeah,
right. Like,
It's like force lightning. Yeah, I could blow up stars.
Yeah, exactly. It's a hyper escalation. And then again, right, like We'll talk about it when we get to Galen Merrick, but like, yeah, it's cool to be able to pull down a Star Destroyer, but then it calls into question the idea of using Star Destroyers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Does it make sense? I don't want to derail us on that conversation right here, right now.
But what did Yoda say?
What?
It matters not the size.
Right, yeah. Yes. Not this crude matter. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, that's all I got.
Yeah. All right, cool. Just want to give a shout out to one of our new patrons, Marta Firu. I hope I'm saying that right. Thank you, sir or madam, whatever you are.
If you're a vampire, please don't eat us.
Yeah. We appreciate all the support, you guys. If anyone wants to reach out and give us your questions, comments.
Pick a side in our conflict.
Yeah. Star, who invented hyperspace? What else? Or hyperdrive technology, rather. What else? If you want to support us, go to patreon.com/StarLores. You can find us on our social medias at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Discord. Just look up Star Lores. And then if you're having troubles with the Discord link, just let us know and we'll send it to you. Email starlorespodcast@gmail.com. You can send us all your emails there. Also give us a 5-star rating and review. That helps us reach more people, on especially on Spotify and iTunes. Yeah, I think that's about it. Any other housekeeping? No. Okay, cool. Peace.